The recordings have started. Speakers, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 8th of April, 2015. On the call today, we have Carlos Raul Gutierrez, Cheryl Langdonor, Olivi Kwame, Alan Greenberg, Chuck Gomes, Tom Barrett, Amr Elstar, and Ann Aikman-Scalise. We show apologies from Wolf Ulrich Knobin, J. Scott Evans, and Mary Wong. From staff, we have Marika Coney, Amy Bivens, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Welcome to everyone to our Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 8th of April, 2015. Looks like we have a good turnout, and we're going to jump right into the agenda. It's a fairly simple agenda. We want to, first of all, go over the work that Avery and Cheryl and Alan, I think, did on one item, and then we'll jump... just continue where we left off last week and going through the public comments. Any questions or comments on the agenda before we move ahead? Okay. Then let's first of all take a look at principle. Public comment 4.18, I think, is where this came up.
Yes.
We don't have to show that, I don't think, on the screen right now, because it's better to have the language proposed by Avery and Cheryl and I think Alan up there right now. So, as I understand it, I see Avery's not on. Cheryl, do you want to talk about this? Or do you want me to do it?
Because I'll need to come off mute to do so. But Alan's got his hand up. He's rushing to do it. Okay.
Okay, Alan, go ahead.
No, I put my hand up to speak after Cheryl, since I actually, although I was on the team of three, I didn't do anything. So I'll let Cheryl speak first, and then I'll do what I should have done before this meeting started.
Okay, very good. Cheryl, you're on.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Cheryl, for the record. And I suspect it's only that Avery must have done about 5 hours in the last seven of available to the world of ICANN conference calls, she isn't on this call just yet. She may join us shortly. This was a homework assignment that Avery owned out of the last call, but Alan and I had stuck our nose into the conversation, so we kind of got into the contributions part of it as well. It's in two parts, as you can see. There is new text. The newish part to the text is the latter part under principle, which is subject to what Alan is going to say is... and Avery's with us. Avery, I can stop pretending being you. Yay! Okay, well, I'll shush and the real boss can now talk. Introduce the people.
Oh, I ain't no boss. I just...
Welcome, Avery.
I pass the pen to Avery and the microphone.
And Avery, what I had asked Cheryl to do in your absence was just to briefly describe what's on the screen in Adobe. And before we continue where we left off last week on the public comments, I thought it'd be a good idea if we address this good work that you and Cheryl did, it sounds like. So if you'd like to talk about it, you have the mic. Don't worry about Alan's hand. We're going to take care of him in a minute.
That's what a lot of people say.
So, Avery, would you like to talk about the work that you and Cheryl did? Maybe on mute if you're talking, so we're not hearing anything. Okay, not hearing anything from Aubrey.
Her microphone is going on and off mute, though.
Okay.
Derry, can you give Aubrey a hand there, please?
Certainly, yes.
Well, Alan, perhaps while we're waiting for Aubrey to sort out her audio issue, she's talking and off mute, so Terry's going to sort that out. I'm sure she can do. Chuck, would it be worthwhile hearing from Alan what he would have contributed to the homework assignment if he'd done it?
Sure, that's a good idea. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. To be honest, when I first saw this, I was having trouble remembering why it was assigned, but I eventually did remember that it was my fault, and I had raised the issue of the possibility that there are situations where the GNSO may have a hard time addressing the public interest when it was in potential conflict or direct conflict with contracted parties' needs. And as such, I think it does that, but the public interest part, I think, got lost a little bit. It is mentioned in the third line of the principle, but I think it needs to be strengthened a little bit, and I would do that with adding just a word or so and say, and particularly, basis to adhere to standards of fairness, notice, transparency, integrity, objectivity, predictability, and in particular, I'm not sure now where it has to go. Towards the end, and in particular, its commitment to the global public interest.
So after and, you would say, and in particular, its commitment to the global public interest as outlined.
Yeah, there may be a two. There may might be a two needed there, but yes.
Yeah, well, we can take care of that part.
On the second part, I think the last sentence is somewhat gratuitous. That's just repeating the whole purpose of this whole process.
Well, this is...
Can I be heard now?
Yes.
You can, Aubrey.
Go ahead, Aubrey, now that we can hear you. Please.
Okay. Sorry, the microphone I was using wasn't working for some reason. In any case, yes, all I did was add in the first one, and its commitment. I don't know, and in particular, its commitment adds a lot to it, but I have no objection to it. I think a principle. The reason I added that last line is because whenever we get into these discussions in terms of the GNSO and the board's gotten involved and we've gotten into discussions with the ACs, there's sort of been a question left. You know, well, you've sent it to the board. The board has talked to the ACs, you know, and I really wanted to make sure that we were explicit about the fact that the loop terminates with the GNSO sending a resolved, you know, set of recommendations back to the board, that it's not that the board takes all this in and then comes out with, you know, its policy recommendation or comes out with an amended policy. So I understand everything in this, and so I understand there may be a little bit of redundancy, but since this part of the process has sort of gone beyond the GNSO to deal with the multiple issues, it needs to be, I think, stated that it comes back to the GNSO to be sent on. So that's why that little bit of redundancy is there.
Thank you, Aubrey. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I can certainly live with it. I was pointing it out, but Aubrey's right. No matter how many times you say it, someone will say, but I thought the GNSO was supposed to be making the decision, so it certainly doesn't hurt. In particular, I think because the public interest comes sort of at the end of a very long laundry list, I think focusing on it does bring it to the head, which is what we are attempting to do with this change. So I would certainly prefer to see that. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. This is Chuck. And does anybody object to adding in particular after, between between and its commitment there. Please put a red X or raise your hand like Amr did. If you do, Amr, please go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. To be honest, I'm having a little trouble figuring out what the added phrase regarding the global public interest added to this principle. The way I'm reading it is that the standards we're talking about are the same, the standards that the development and implementation of policy have to adhere to, which are fairness, notice, transparency, integrity, objectivity, and predictability, as well as due process. And what we're saying is that these standards have to be consistent with ICANN's core values, particularly that of the global public interest. So I'm not sure how the principle has actually changed with the addition of this phrase, because the standards haven't changed. ICANN is committed to the global public interest, and so these standards need to be consistent with that. But I don't think that adding global public interest in this principle as is actually adds any requirement of the GNSO to consider the global public interest in development and implementation of policy from a substantive perspective. And that was my understanding when Alan first raised this, and that's also why I sort of questioned how that might fit in with what we're doing. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention and see what folks have to say about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. This is Chuck. Alan, go ahead and respond.
Oh, I thought Avery was in between us.
She was. It went away, so I assume she intentionally.
Amr's right. This is not a panacea, and it's not going to fix the problem, but it highlights the problem or highlights the issue. I personally believe we are not going to solve the problem until we have a significant restructuring. But, you know, that's not within our mandate to recommend. So all we can do is highlight the issue.
Thank you, Ellen. Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, the reason I dropped out is because I figured since this issue had been originally brought up by Alan, I'd, you know, give him certainly the chance to put it in. I think that it's important, and I'm actually agreeing not only because it was my homework assignment, but because I think it's actually important to acknowledge the global public interest within our principles. And I think that, indeed, the global public interest is made up of the standards of fairness, notice, transparency, integrity, objectivity, et cetera, including all of the other interests that people bring into this that have gone through the sort of policy development process mill that we go through to identify the global public interest. But since our articles of incorporation do call out that's a goal that we're serving, I thought it was important to just put it there. And it's that serving the global public interest that sort of constrains the sort of application of all those other stuff, of all those other things. What standards of transparency? What standards of, you know, productivity and fairness? And it's those that are in the public interest and that the community at large accepts as being within the global public interest. So I think it's a very important stake for us to sort of include in our principles. And that's kind of why I'm willing to take the homework assignment when it was being handed out.
Thank you very much, Avery. Amr, I have a question for you. This is Chuck speaking. Are you opposed to this addition, or can you live with it?
This is Amr. No, I am not opposed to it at all. I just wanted to point out what I did earlier, and if that's what folks are agreeing to add to this principle, then I am not at all opposed. I just wasn't really sure how adding it actually mitigated any risk of conflict between what may be perceived as the global public interest and what may be the interest of contracted parties which is, I believe, what started this whole discussion. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention, at least my question on this. But if we are proceeding with this under the understanding of what Alan said earlier and what Aubrey just outlined, then yes, I have no objection. Thanks.
Thanks, Armour. Alan.
Thank you. Just to belabor the point more, one of ICANN's responsibilities is to ensure the vibrancy of the industry that surrounds the domain system, because without that, it doesn't really work. I think what this principle is saying, and what the Articles of Incorporation are saying, are that when a push comes to shove, public interest trumps a particular place where contracted parties or other interested players in this game can make money. We can't forget the overall requirement that we have a good and strong industry, but the public interest, comes ahead of that on our priority list. This goes part way to saying that. It doesn't fix any problems. It's just a reference point.
Thank you, Alan. And if you'll allow me to take my chair hat off for a moment, I do object a little bit to the assumption that contracted parties are only interested in making money and are not interested in the public interest. That said, I don't want to belabor this any longer either, so let's not belabor it any longer.
Yeah. Chuck, just to be clear, I didn't say they're only interested. I said where there is a conflict, which does not necessarily show up on a regular basis.
Going on to the recommendation, I have one. First of all, is anybody opposed to adding the recommendation that is proposed here at the bottom of the text that's on the screen? Okay. That said, does anybody have a suggestion as where this might fit as a recommendation in our report? Go ahead, Greg.
I'm sure you wish I was answering your question, but I'm not. Greg Shatton, for the record.
I was hoping for that, but go ahead.
I guess the question I have is whether this principle here is applying only to the new, the three new forms of policy advice mechanism, or does it also apply to the traditional PDP?
Well, let me respond first of all to that, Greg. This is Chuck. I think our principles, if I understand their purpose, were not designed to specifically relate to the three processes. In fact, they were developed before we introduced the three processes.
I think
they relate to policy and implementation in general, which would, of course, include the PDP. So thanks, Alan, for the green check mark. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. I just wanted to add as well that within the current PDP, there is already a requirement to have conversation, and it's done in the form of a public comment prior to the board considering GNSO policy recommendations, and I think that's specifically as well for that purpose, so that those that feel that they weren't heard or haven't expressed views that can do that at that point in time, and that would allow as well the board at that point to say, well, GNSO, did you consider this? And if not, can you please consider it as further input to your work? So I think it's currently already something that exists in the PDP. Do have to think hard, because I don't think there have been any instances that I recall where actually input was received that made the board send it back, although I know there are some recommendations currently on the consideration that did receive different advice at a later stage in the process. But I think, as Chuck said, my understanding is as well that these principles are generally applicable and as such, in my view, would also apply to the current PDP.
Thanks, Marika. Chuck again. Greg, did you want to follow up?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. In terms of the language itself, I'm first wondering the advice of – we talked about the advice of the advisory communities. Aren't those advisory committees?
Yes, it should be committees.
And is the advisory committees to – are each – I don't think there is a kind of – there's not a mass of advisory committees. There are they're very separate. I mean, there's the GAC, there's the ALAC, SAC, and RSAC. And I don't think of them as a whole, personally. Are we saying then that any advisory committee could essentially, if it disagreed with the GNSO about a decision on GTLD policy, could it essentially kind of force the board to send back a policy recommendation?
Well, Greg, this is Chuck. I think that's true of all of them except for the ALAC. Just kidding, okay?
Well, it may be that the GAC's current, communique system and the deference to the GAC essentially works to do that already. And I don't know if the RSAC or SAC have ever really tried to send anything back because, generally speaking, we don't screw things up for them.
It's a valid point. Let's let some others jump in on that. Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Aubrey. Assuming I can be heard, I plugged my old mic back in again because I figured out the problem.
You can.
Okay, great. I think that any of them can. In fact, we were talking about earlier in one of the other meetings about, the ATRT having recommended that any advisory committee that sends something to the board needs to at least be acknowledged and responded to. So it's not that the advisory committees can in any sense force the board, and we don't talk about it here, but it's one of those things that if the advisory committee is coming to the board with a brand new issue that they never brought up and why didn't it ever get brought up during the course of the PDP, the board might decide one way. If the advisory committee can show that we've presented this all the way through, but we don't believe that the issue was adequately tackled, and so we have a problem, the board can then take that advice into account in making its decision. I don't even think the GAC forces things back. The GAC forces a certain kind of mechanism out of the board. The board can decide as part of its deliberations that it agrees with the GAC, but when it decides it agrees with the GAC, instead of doing what it's done in the past sometimes, which is, oh, okay, we'll change the policy recommendations to match what the GAC has said, this basically sort of seems to recommend that, no, at that point you're saying more talking is needed and the GNSO has to be part of that talking. And I think that's the point, part of the point that's getting made here, is one, they have to be listened to, and two, if there's something that the board feels is properly unresolved, then it needs to go back to the GNSO.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Chuck. And before I give it to Alan, I think it's fair we're going to change communities to committees. Okay, so it says advisory committees, as Greg suggested. Now, Alan, you're up.
Thank you. Most of it's been said. Certainly no one can force the board to do something, but we can. All they can do is alert the board to consider it. I'll give not an example where it happened, but an if scenario. The board has received a number of UDRP. Of a UDRP recommendation. The board has received a number of PDP results on domain transfers recently. I don't think anyone on the board really has, with the exception perhaps of Bruce, an in-depth knowledge of these issues and might appreciate the subtleties of what the recommendations were saying. Therefore, to a large extent, I think the board is rubber stamping those. That is, the GNSO, in its wisdom, has made a recommendation. It's been duly considered. It's been adopted by the GNSO. Unless someone can show cause, we're going to accept it. And I think that's true for a lot of the, not the grand and glorious things like new GTLD policies, but of the mechanical things that go through the GNSO. The board is not necessarily an expert on it. And all we're saying here is that if someone says, hey, you better look at that in more detail because we believe an error was made, the board can take that under consideration. That's it.
Thank you very much, Alan. Chuck again. Greg, you're up.
Thanks. I think two things. I think the language here is a little stronger than that because it says the board will use existing process mechanisms to either send the issue back to the GNSO or initiate broader community discussion. The board has no discretion to say, yes, advisory committee, we hear you, or, yeah, we read the public comments and we see a bunch of stuff. But, you know, we think this is overall fine. And we're making a decision not to send it back to the GNSO and not to initiate broader community discussion. So I don't know if that's intentional, and we're trying to essentially leave the board without a choice. I mean, spent several hours today on various conversations about how to limit the board's runaway power. Now I'm not sure in this case whether this is one case where we do want to give them some discretion. And part of this all depends on, in essence, whose ox is being gored. If one imagines oneself always in the seat of, you know, being concerned or unhappy with a GNSO policy recommendation and wishing one could do more about it, and is not in the GNSO because this doesn't, you know, unless it's done by public comment, then I guess this is a good thing. If one thinks that the GNSO policy recommendations, you know, should be given more deference and, you know, it shouldn't necessarily empower the GAC. If we decide that, you know, geographic names are not superior to trademarks, that the GAC can somehow, you know, send it back based on this right as opposed to something in their communique. I just don't know that. To some extent, I'm concerned that this kind of upsets the balance of the way the board and the GNSO and the ACs kind of deal with each other on GNSO policy recommendations. I guess that perhaps that's the intent, is to weaken the GNSO vis-a-vis the rest of the community in making GTLD policy with which it's charged to do, and perhaps this is an alternative way of dealing with what some people might view, and which sometimes I view, depending upon when you ask me, being kind of structural or decisional imbalances or power imbalances within the GNSO, and which also could be solved conceivably within the GNSO. But at this point, you kind of say, well, if we can't solve the problem by changing the process mechanism, we'll change the problem. We'll solve the problem by dealing with how the result is handled by the board. And so I'm concerned that this is not a modest change, but is actually quite a significant change in overall policy making.
Thanks, Greg. Chuck again. And before I go to Aubrey and Alan, I'd like you to be thinking about how you would change the language after we hear from them to different. Now, I confess, to throw in just a personal comment here, I didn't necessarily see this as weakening the GNSO, but if it does, I might also be opposed to that. But anyway, if you'd think about maybe any edits you think would be helpful here, that would be great, and we'll come back to you later. Aubrey, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. As the person that wrote it, I actually see it strengthening the GNSO. First of all, the sentence is written as a conditional. It doesn't say if then, but it's if the board discovers that the recommendations in the review reflect the broader consensus, then they can do this. Now, the board is, for better or for worse, stuck in the position of getting, you know, being as Alan said at one point, unless we reorganize everything, of being at the point at which GNSO-SO recommendations and AC advice come together. Now, the GNSO is doing everything possible to invite the ACs to comment at the time of the issues report, to comment at the time of the reviews, and so on and so forth. And it really does do quite a bit of work to try and get that. But I don't think we get to say, because you didn't speak up sooner and you're speaking up now with an issue that we didn't cover adequately because the board thinks there's still an open issue, then what I'm really concerned about from a GNSO perspective is that those are the occasions when the board says, what ho, we must do something, and they do something. And what I'm really trying to say is, when that happens, you know, and perhaps we want to change the reflect the broader consensus based on advice to something mushier, but it really is a conditional that basically that the GNSO and the ACs together have not managed to do their work properly so that the recommendation that comes not only is the SO's recommendation, but deals with all the other issues that the ACs have been putting or could put on the table with regard to those recommendations. So I actually think it's a strengthening of the GNSO, not a weakening, and I think that is in the fact that it's a conditional, though you're right, the conditional could be softened, and it could be possibly only when they discover an issue that has not been taken into proper account. And that was the wording that I thought of. But and then by including the last line that says, and at the end of the day, no matter what the GAC has said, ALAC or ESAC, at the end of the day, the final recommendation has to come from the GNSO. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. And just a request, and this isn't directed at Aubrey, but a lot of us have been taking a lot of words to say what we need to say, and we've got a long ways to go in going through these comments. So while still feeling free to make your point, try and be as brief as possible. Alan, your turn.
Thank you very much. I put my hand up to point out what Aubrey did, that it says, if in their view. So it gives them an out. They don't have to remand it. I tend to agree a little bit with Greg that we should make it really clear that the board has the discretion to accept the GNSO recommendations. And if this can be construed as not doing that, it might need to be modified. However, in reading it carefully, I did realize that in the second line where it says consensus based on the advice, it should be including the advice. That the advice that they get after the fact then is not the only things they should be basing their conclusions on.
Could you be a little more explicit on the change you're recommending?
Yes, reflect a broader consensus including the advice.
Anybody have a problem with that change? If just speak up right now or raise, put a X in the, a red X in the chat. Are not in the chat. In the
Avery is the author. Has put a checkbox. So
one thing, I think it's fine. This is Avery speaking.
Go ahead.
Except that then probably the or after community should be end. So it'd be including the advice of the advisory communities and public comments.
Yes, that's fine. Sure.
Good. Okay. All right. Fine.
Okay. Now it still might need some tweaking to make it clear that this is a decision point of the board and not, you know, doesn't mandate they must send it back. But I'm past my stage where I can wordsmith online.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. If you do come up with some wording, please give it to us later. Tom.
I'd like to propose an amendment to the second sentence that starts with it will use existing process mechanisms to either send the issue back to the GSO for further consideration. And instead of saying, or initiate broader community discussion, I would like to say, to initiate broader community discussion. So replace the word or with to.
Any problems with that? Okay, thanks, Amr, for the... Okay, all right, that change can be made then. Anything else, Tom?
No, that was it. I just wanted to make sure that we were not inviting the board to initiate their own discussion as opposed to asking the GNSO to do it.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Anne, your turn.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. I just want to make a quick proposal regarding the word discovers. I think the word discovers is not necessarily too easy to make an exact determination of what's happening, and I would propose that it's whenever the board determines. Discovers is about somebody first having the thought, but I think that what we're talking about here would require a board determination. We're saying, in their view, here's what the board determines, but versus, you know, discovers is less definite.
Looks like there's about five green check marks in there for that, Anne. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got that right, Marika. Okay, Greg, your turn.
I think the changes that have been made and the change to including and the fact that I think that this is really about a broader consensus and not about a single act, you know, making it known that they differ with the GNSO and the determination and the fact that the board has an out in their view. I think this is acceptable. I withdraw my concerns about it.
Thank you, Greg, and great discussion, everyone. So and good edits. Now I'm going to come back to my question of where we're going to put this. But before I do that, Marika, as an action item, because there are members of our working group that aren't on this call, and because we're introducing a change to a principle that's been accepted for a long time and a new recommendation, let's, if you would please, or one of your team, send out, once we finish this one, I mean, after this meeting, of course, the fact that the people on the call today agreed to whatever we end up agreeing to here, which we're getting close to, I think. And now is the time to speak up if you have any concerns or questions. Okay? Is that all right? Again, I think we need to, at this stage of our process, we need to make sure that we at least give a very clear opportunity for anyone who's not on the call, for example, to weigh in. And let's ask them to weigh in on this within a week, just to put a time frame on it, so before our next meeting. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think we still have the open question of where this should be placed in the document.
I agree.
And we may not need to, you know, discuss that now, and maybe this is an item where, you know, that as we make these updates as agreed to in the document, maybe staff can have a look and make a suggestion on where it seems to fit, and we can then discuss it at that time, unless, of course, someone already has some specific ideas on where it will go.
I'm hoping that Avery does. This is Chuck. Avery, go ahead.
Well, like I recommended, my original recommendation is that it related to community. And so we had a section that says GNSO and then community. And then the second thought, well, maybe it had to be a separate, you know, board. But I think it's fine in community.
Okay, now, I didn't follow what you're saying. Are you answering the question about where this should go?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, yeah. If you look at the report at the moment, mm-hmm. And it basically has things that are the GNSO, related to GNSO, and then related to community.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but I did when I was reading it. So I was saying this one went under related to community.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful. And Marika, we don't need to take care of it right now, like you said, but if you could go ahead and let's do a red line of that portion of the report, maybe, to show where it fits for those that aren't on the call so they understand it. Anybody disagree with that placement? Okay. Is there anything else we need to talk about on this? Okay. Again, this is Chuck speaking. So thank you, Avery and Cheryl, for the work you did on this. Thank you, everyone on this call, for the good contributions. And let's now pick up where we left off last week. And that is on 5.4 in the public comments. And we have a good representation of groups on the call, and hopefully that will be useful today, like it was last week. So, yes, Anne, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. I'm sorry, I had a little housekeeping with respect to 5.3, where we finished off with the IPC comment about early GAC consultation with respect to all three processes, and I had volunteered to seek input from my group and come back to how that might change our initial report. So I'm posting in chat a very specific recommendation. You know, Marika had pointed out earlier, for example, if you look at page 46 of the initial report, we talk about the GIP team is encouraged to solicit input from each stakeholder group and constituency in the early stages of the GIP. And somewhere in there, we are suggesting that, and I don't know if it's going to be team leaders or chairs or whatever, but we would add a sentence in each of the three processes in this regard. It is recommended that the GIP team leader or chair consult with the GNSO Council GAC liaison regarding the best way to achieve early GAC participation or consultation with respect to the issues under consideration. So the point being just recognizing there is a GAC liaison and trying to, you know, facilitate, if needed, a consultation or participation specifically with the GAC because of the difficulties everyone has experienced in sorting out issues where the GAC comes late or there's a conflict with the GAC.
Thanks, Anne. And my understanding, this is Chuck, am I understanding correctly that would be inserted in each one of the processes?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. That's what I heard, and I want to make sure I confirm that. I would just suggest one edit to that if people are supportive of that, and that is that we might say GAC liaison or I'm not sure what, but we don't know that there will always be a GAC liaison, okay? The GAC has changed on things like that over the years, so we might want to just be a little more flexible there. GAC liaison or similar contact or something in that regard. Does that make sense, Anne?
I think it does. It's Anne again, in terms of if you think that the GAC liaison is going to go away.
I don't know, but those kind of things have fluctuated over the years with the GAC.
Sure.
Go ahead, Anne.
No, I think that more flexible language is better. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Marika, did you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, this is Marika. I indeed wanted to point out that actually the GNSO liaison to the GAC is currently a pilot project that we expect will continue next year as a pilot, but it has not been confirmed yet that it will be a permanent feature. So I think it's a good suggestion that Chuck makes. And what I've done to the language is basically it would be something like the GNSO GAC liaison or equivalent, I guess making an assumption that there will be some kind of point of contact and that maybe the secretariat or, you know, through the chairs. But that may address, indeed, in those cases, you know, if the liaison would no longer exist, that you know, we don't need to update this language to reflect that necessarily.
Thanks, and you can see the green check marks there as well. Thanks, Marika. Alan, your turn.
Yeah, first, just to be argumentative, I'm not sure the GNSO Council GAC liaison is the correct word. I think it's the GNSO Council liaison to the GAC. The way it's worded now, it sounds like it's the GAC liaison to the GNSO Council,
Which
is a position that doesn't technically exist anymore.
Yeah, let's make that change. I think.
Okay. However, do we really need to be that specific, number one? And number two, is there a reason to focus on the GAC as opposed to advisory committees?
Well, let me respond first, and then Ann may want to jump back in. This is Chuck. It seems to me that the IPC was addressing the fact that there is a new process to try and get GAC early involvement, and so there's a specific reason, and they were trying to tie that into these processes. So at least in my first thought about this, it seems like it is tied to the GAC in this case. Obviously, we would support similar things with other advisory committees, but like, for example, in the ALAC, we haven't had the same difficulty of getting early involvement like we have with the GAC. So I think we're addressing a particular issue that certainly is live right now on that. So, Alan, did you want to say more on that?
No, I'll accept that. But we should be careful that we have the... Okay, I see Marika has changed it now, so fine.
Okay, you got it. Okay, good. Ann, did you want to say more?
No, thanks. That is absolutely the point, is try to get, you know, more efficient functioning by trying to draw the GAC in so that they don't delay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks all. And let's go to 5.4, and thank you for bringing that up, Anne. I appreciate that. On 5.4, it's an NCSG comment, I think we have more than one person on the call that could speak to that. Do one of you want to volunteer to talk to that comment? Comment 5.4. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. Yeah, the NCSG had a pretty lengthy response, I think, to this question. This question is pertaining to how agreeable the respondent to the survey found the three new processes being suggested. What the NCSG did was that we thought that the suggestions for the GNSO IMP process were fine, but we do have some reservations regarding the two other processes. The first one, which is common to both, is the voting threshold required by the GNSO Council to initiate the processes or to approve the initiation of them. And this is something that I think we discussed for just a couple of minutes on the last call of 2014. And the concern that I raised at that time was, how do we ensure that these processes don't trump a traditional PDP? If there are a number of counselors, even a minority of GNSO counselors, who feel that a more exhaustive PDP is required to answer a specific question, then we should ensure that this is possible, as opposed to having a low threshold of approving the initiation of a GGP or an EPDP. So this was the first concern.
And Elmer, let me stop you there, just because I think it'd be good if we focus on that specifically. It's a good point, in my opinion. This is Chuck speaking. I don't think any of us want that to happen. So if you had, if I'm hearing you correctly, and I'm going to ask you to respond to this, you're concerned that if we have a lower threshold for one of these new processes, that could trump a PDP, for example, that has a higher threshold. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, Chuck. This is Amr. That you did understand that correctly.
Good.
So I think what
That's
we need
point.
To do here. Yeah, I think what we do need to do here is make sure that the threshold is high enough so that a minority of counselors can vote against it in favor of perhaps launching a more traditional or exhaustive PDP.
Okay. Marika wants to jump in. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm wondering if this goes to a broader point that you know, maybe needs to be reemphasized, you know, somewhere in the report that there's a kind of hierarchy in processes. Because I don't think we either want a situation where on, you know, the same subject we have, you know, a PDP, a GGP, and, you know, an EPDP going at the same time. Because, you know, of course, in theory, you could have, you know, a supermajority voting to initiate a GGP, while, you know, for initiating a PDP, it's a relatively lower voting threshold, so that vote may pass as well. So I don't know if there's a way, or, and I don't know how, you know, if that's automatically being dealt with, if there's an understanding of, you know, hierarchy and processes, or whether we indeed need to spell out that, you know, if there's agreement to initiate a PDP on a topic, that automatically excludes it, you know, from a GGP or an EPDP until that process is completed, or something along those lines, so you don't have a situation, indeed, whereby, you know, a process that deems, I think, of our you know, higher significance or with, you know, broader implications, trumped by one that's maybe seen by some as, you know, having less force or possible significance, and having those even run at the same time in parallel. Or at least I think that's what I'm understanding Armour's comments to you know, direct towards. But if I misunderstood, I'll stand happily corrected.
Armour, do you want to respond directly to that? Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck. This is Armour. I'll try to have a go at that. And also to clarify some of the reasoning using a scenario, for example, on why we may have this concern. Let's say a certain issue comes up and the counselor puts forward a motion to initiate an EPDP. What I'm looking for here is a mechanism in the process to allow for a minority of counselors to, for example, object to that because they feel a scoping phase is necessary for this issue. The voting threshold for initiating an EPDP, if it's too low, then this minority of counselors will not have the opportunity to successfully vote against the motion, and for example, have the opportunity to approve a PDP. So it's more of a, it depends on what comes first. I mean, there could be a discussion on the council regarding what the motion should be, and normally that sort of thing may take place and usually does. But in the event that a motion is actually submitted, suggesting the initiation of an EPDP, then there needs to be a guarantee that this minority of counselors have the opportunity to successfully vote against this initiation. Does that help at all?
Well, Armour, let me raise a couple issues, and Alan, I'm coming to you, okay? But one of the problems, and we dealt with this when we originally set up thresholds for the initiating a PDP and so forth, and quite a few people in this group probably remember that. If you set the threshold too high, then it makes it really easy, too easy for a group, a minority, to block it. So there's conflicting issues there. But let me go to Alan, and then I want to come back and ask a couple other questions that I think are pertinent to one of the points you made in the first part of your discussion of the comments. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. Unless it makes sense in some instance to have multiple parallel processes on the same exact issue or an overlapping issues, and I don't think it does, but I may be missing something, then it's reasonable for us to make a recommendation that there only be one on the same subject, and should there be motions to initiate different ones, council must decide, you know, through normal majority voting, which to do before it can proceed with initiation of any of them.
That's a good point.
Does that address it?
Yeah, it may, but I'll let Armour respond to that. But let me ask two questions and also make a comment about the way the council functions, and it's kind of tied into what I think Alan just said. And that is, first of all, you said, if I understood your comments correctly, Armour, that the concern was one of the new processes. You weren't talking about the GIP. I understand that. In other words, either the GGP or the GIP trumping a full PDP. While I think I agree with Alan that we probably should not have two process, we definitely shouldn't have two processes on the same subject, a PDP and a GGP at the same time. That probably shouldn't happen. But understand that a GGP can't, I don't think it can really trump a PDP because the results are different. Now, the council is going to have to make a decision, like Alan said, which one do you use? But if you want consensus policies that are imposed on contracted parties, you have to use a PDP or an EPDP. A GGP won't address that. So I'm not sure it's a full trump, but at the same time, your point's well taken that we don't want these to be easy ways of avoiding the longer work. Secondly, with and the same thing with an EPDP, I guess it could really trump, but it would have to meet very strict criteria to even qualify and not use a full PDP. So I'm not seeing as much concern about those two processes trumping a full PDP. And then my last comment before I go to Marika is this, and I think this is kind of what Alan was getting at. The council is going to look at these things, and they're the manager of the process, and they should be examining these issues to see if it comes down to should we do a GGP or a PDP, or does more research need to be done. I'm confident that the council, as the manager of the process, will discuss those before they even get to a vote, and hopefully people will put forward good rationales for their position so that the best decision is made. And I'll stop there, and I think Marika was next, and then Alan again.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that I think I really like Alan's suggestion, you know, to specify that that would need to be worked out, because, you know, I think hearing you refer to the possible scenarios, you know, I couldn't imagine a scenario on a certain topic where any contracted parties may not, you know, want or, you know, feel inclined to have new obligations or something, and instead prefer, you know, a GGP that would, you know, provide more guidance on a topic, while other parties may actually feel strongly that it should have, you know, there should be new contractual requirements on that. So, again, there, I think on the hierarchy of things, you know, there may need to be some kind of decision saying, indeed, if you know, and I don't know if we need to go that far or whether that's, you know, if that indeed happens, we'll need to deal with it. But indeed, in that scenario where, you know, there are opposite views as well as interests involved in how to deal with the issue, you know, whether indeed a PDP then would all, if the voting threshold is met for a PDP, whether that then would automatically trump, you know, the kind of, I think, the lesser process, and that wouldn't create contractual obligations. But again, maybe it's something as well I can check back with, you know, with some of my legal colleagues on how that needs to be dealt with, if at all, or whether that's, you know, an automatic hierarchy that may follow. But it is, of course, a potential scenario that could occur, where, you know, there are two opposing views or ideas on how something should be dealt with, and in that case, how do you, you know, resolve that?
And I think that's a council management job right there. But let's go to Alan.
Thank you very much. It strikes me that you certainly don't, although, Chuck, you're right, the council manages this process, but you wouldn't want the decision to be made on which to be done based on who put the motion in first, or even worse, who orders the council agenda and which motion gets voted on first.
Right.
So you do need a process by which to do it. It strikes me that maybe you don't want to decide which to do. Maybe you have to order the motions for the more stringent one first. I haven't thought this through, and it really does require a bit of thinking, because the thresholds are quite low for approving these kind of things. But, you know,
go ahead.
If you decide which way to order them, I'm not 100% sure which way it should be. You know, if one gets approved, then the other one just disappears.
Yeah, and keep in mind that we're going to come to the threshold specifically later in the comments.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to actually settle the threshold issue right now. We're going to get to those directly in the public comments. Because we ask questions about those.
Yeah, no, I understand that, Chuck, but the subtle difference in is you can approve with a lower threshold than you need just to approve a standard motion. So if you have a standard motion to decide among the two, that's a 50% plus one threshold, unless we take specific action to make it something else.
Right.
Whereas if you order them and then see which one is, see if the first one gets approved, that's a lower threshold. It may actually require playing through a number of scenarios and seeing which one, because Marika's right, you don't want to be in a situation where a small number of people, i.e. the contracted parties, ensure that we do not go through a process which will create consensus policy.
Right. No,
so,
I agree with that. Yeah,
so that's something we do have to guard against. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks, Alan, for those last few comments. I agree completely. I would like to add, though, that it's not just a matter of creating consensus policy. There is also the possibility of relieving contracted parties from consensus policy that has already been created, and that may be something that a minority of counselors may feel, for example, a GGP is not appropriate for. For example, what happened last year with Specification 13 of the Registry Agreement, this was something that I personally, as a GNSO counselor, thought that should go through a process where a previously approved consensus policy was being reopened and rediscussed to sort of explore whether contracted parties should be excused from certain commitments they have in their contracts. But the GNSO Council sort of approached that from a perspective of, okay, there is no new policy being developed, although there was existing policy that was developed. So that's one scenario where I think it may be necessary to make sure that a PDP may be required. And it's just an example. I'm trying to go back to some of the earlier comments as well. And Chuck, you raised the issue of making initiating these processes too difficult and perhaps setting them up so that they could be blocked by a small minority of counselors. And this was something that at least I considered when helping to draft these comments. And that really isn't the approach that I took, to be honest. I wasn't really looking at trying to avoid counselors from blocking and making it easy for counselors to block these new processes. The way I looked at it is that these processes are actually pretty neat new tools at the GNSO's disposal, and the GNSO should want to use them because it helps makes the work of the GNSO a lot easier. But they should only be used when appropriate, and the specifics of when it is appropriate to use these processes are very clearly spelled out in the prerequisites for each one of them. However, it is the council's subjective decision on when these prerequisites actually are applied, and that will be enforced using a council vote. So that's why I think the voting thresholds and the prerequisites of using each one of these processes may be closely linked and need to be considered together. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. Good points. Aubrey.
Thanks. Aubrey speaking. And in this case, I have to sort of apologize to my NCSG brethren because this is a point I've always remained somewhat confused on, and I think that Amr touched it. In my reading of all of these methods, they were pretty much exclusionary in the fact that when one was appropriate, the other ones weren't. And so I guess I always had that assumption that they don't overlap, that they are separate methods for separate problems. So I was never quite as disturbed by, you know, that one had a lower threshold than the other. So I guess I just want to mark myself as confused. Now, the bit that Amr just said, which is, yes, they perhaps are exclusion, one excludes the other, but that doesn't mean anything because it's subjectively we may go a different way. I suppose that's possible, but if we keep making rules for the things that we might subjectively do, I think part of what's bothering me now is I think we're adding complexity on complexity, and it's hitting my complexity alarms. It worries me that, you know, we're having a vote, decide what kind of vote we're going to take, and those things always worry me a little. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. And I think that's kind of where I was coming from when I said the council, as the policy management body, I think we've got to trust them to do a reasonable job at this without bogging them down with every little detail of what happens. Now, a question for Amr. Am I correct in this part of the NCSG comments that we need to deal with those when we talk about the thresholds, or is there something we need to do beyond just the threshold issue?
This is Amr. Well, part of the response to this question is regarding the threshold issue. There are other parts of the comments that move on to other
things that the NCSG feels.
Yeah. Okay, but this part is dealing specifically.
On this part specifically, is it a threshold issue?
Yes, it is. At least I believe that this could be handled by raising the voting threshold to approve initiation of one of these processes. Thanks.
I just wanted to confirm that. And so we need to, and maybe that's what we put in the recommended action, we need to, with regard to this part of the comments, we need to revive this discussion, not repeat it, but at least recall it. Maybe recall is a better word. To when we get to the threshold issues, so that we take what we've talked about and then deal with it with regard to the thresholds that are in the recommendations right now. So let me now turn it to
Chuck, if I may.
You may.
Yeah, Chuck, if I can just come back to that real quick. If I recall correctly, and I probably need to take another look, the threshold issues further down in the questionnaire don't specifically address the thresholds used to initiate the processes. They are questions on threshold of approving recommendations.
Okay,
so these are two different sets of...
Points well taken, and I haven't looked ahead.
Yeah, they're two different sets of thresholds, yeah.
So, Marika, none of our questions dealt with the thresholds to initiate. Is that correct? Do you recall right off the top of your head?
This is Marika. I know that we had specific questions on thresholds, but I don't think it considered all the thresholds. I think only the ones where, you know, we had some questions or comments around in our discussions. So I did. And I think that Amr is probably right there that if this one wasn't specifically called out, it doesn't come back later in the survey.
So I can't really defer this one then, and that makes sense. Thanks, Amr, for pointing that out. I guess our thresholds right now, Marika, can you refresh all of us, especially me, what the thresholds are for initiating each of the three processes? Or I guess you're just mainly concerned about the GGP and the EPDP, correct, Amr?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so what is the threshold for initiating a GGP?
This is Marika. I probably have to refresh my mind or at least confirm, but if I recall well, I think we suggested that it should be the same as a PDP, so it's relatively low. So, I mean, if I may respond to Amr, I understand where his concerns come from, but maybe, you know, they may be addressed by this notion that, you know, if there are views that it should be dealt with in a different way, then that should be resolved first by the council, because one of the risks is by putting the threshold so high, and as well, I think is one of the reasons why, for example, for PDP, the voting threshold is very low, that it will allow, you know, people to work on the issue if they believe it's important, even if certain people may not have an interest in doing so. So I think that's a bit the balance in, with regard to the threshold. If you make it a supermajority vote, it means that even if some people feel this issue is really, really important and should be addressed, they're not able to because of the high voting threshold. Still noting that, of course, at the end of the day, recommendations do need to be adopted by a supermajority vote. So you do still have that, at the end of the process, you will need everyone on board to actually, adopt the recommendations. But by putting the threshold very high, you basically prevent people from working on it that may feel very strongly that it needs to be addressed. Although at the same time, I do understand as well, the link with, if another process is deemed more appropriate, how do you address that? But I said, maybe, Alan's suggestion of making clear in the report that if there are different view on which process is the most appropriate one, that needs to be sorted first before it even gets to a vote, may address that concern. But I don't know if that ever does from your perspective.
So, Amr, this is Chuck. Am I understanding correctly that the NCSG thinks the threshold for initiating a GGP should be higher than what it is to initiate a PDP? And I see that Amr's audio keeps dropping, so he's not able to hear as well. That's all we needed was technical difficulties, because this is a very good discussion and an important one. Can we get a dialogue?
Is there a problem with the internet again, Dee?
Okay, you're okay right now. You still want to dial out, Amr? Let's go ahead and give him a dial out. Okay. Terry, do we have the dial out information for Amr?
And Chuck, this is Terry. I'll work with him on it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, Greg, go ahead while we're trying to resolve this.
Thanks. My screen is freezing, so I can't see that my hand is up. But in any case, I guess I'm concerned about this suggestion on a number of levels, and I think that the idea of somehow making it harder to initiate a GGP or an EPDP than it would be to initiate a PDP seems counterintuitive to me. And I think that one of the concerns I have is that if you do that, you kind of make it possible for issues which should be dealt with more quickly and nimbly to essentially be sent to PDP hell, and that some have joked over the years that one of the best ways to get rid of an issue is to initiate a PDP on it. I think we've done better over the years in actually having PDPs come to resolution, and I think this group is a good example of it. But it sometimes seems that you make an issue almost go away by putting it into a PDP. And so if the idea is to use it to sidetrack an issue, I'm just concerned that this leaves the opportunity for gaming out there. And I think it also blurs the idea that these were each intended to be fit for purpose, and that really should be the gating factor is whether this actually meets the criteria that each of them is supposed to meet, and not whether there can be some sort of blocking function that exists for one type of process and not for another.
Thank you, Greg. And Alan, I'm going to call on you next, but I want you to come up with as good a term as Greg did, if you can, please.
I can't top that one. I like the expression, anything's to PDP hell. It has great meaning to me. I think Greg just made the definitive advice or definitive comment. You really don't want to be in a position where people block short processes to get long ones. You don't want people to be able to block something being discussed and discussed effectively. So I think if and when you had multiple processes competing with each other, and if they overlap, that may be a difficult judgment call of how to fix that. But if they compete directly with each other, you have to resolve that and pick one. But you don't want to make it hard to initiate these things. Otherwise, you're essentially using that vote as a veto for the policy that might come out of it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan, and thanks, Greg, for the comments. I wonder if this is our response to this one should be to make a recommendation that leadership of the GNSO Council is encouraged to manage the use of these processes in ways that minimize the chances of the kind of things that the NCSG is suggesting, because I think they're important things that they're raising. I'm not sure we can solve them by voting thresholds because of some points made by others, and hopefully all of you saw Michael's comments in the chat as well, which were very good. If you haven't, you might want to scroll back up and look at those. And does that kind of approach to this? I definitely think we need to respond to the NCSG's comments, and even by adding something in our report along the line that I just suggested, so that we don't just drop it. Okay? Does that work as a solution, Amr, from your point of view and from the NCSG's?
Hi, Chuck. This is Amr. I just dialed in, and I'm sorry. I didn't hear anything that was being said since Marika started.
Sure. What I suggested was I think some good points have been made, and you can scroll back up in the chat and see some there, as well as points that people have made verbally, like Greg and Alan. It seems to me that by lowering the threshold, or excuse me, making the threshold higher, that creates some new problems. So my suggestion was is that in our report, along maybe as before any of these specific recommendations are made, or wherever the appropriate places in the report, that it is recommended that GNSO Council leadership in its management of policy role remain conscious of the issues that the NCSG raises and manages the process towards the most productive outcome possible. And my it can be worded a lot better than I did, but the point is to I said, Amr, that I don't think we should just let the NCSG comments on this alone and say, well, we decided not to make any change. I think we ought to recommend that the kind of conflicts and issues that, and name them from the NCSG comments, be kept in mind when managing the overall process to an outcome that is hopefully the most productive at all for the public interest and the community as a whole. Did that make any sense, Amr?
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. I think it makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, I don't feel that it really addresses the problem. And like I said, this may just come down to subjectivity of views of counselors on a certain topic. So, for example, and the example I gave was on specification 13, and using that example, the GNSO Council decided that there was no new policy issue, so there was no need to go through a lengthy process, and we could just sort of address, give our recommendation directly to the ICANN board. Personally, I thought that there was an issue because although no new obligations were being created for contracted parties at the time, I think that there were existing obligations that the ICANN board was allowing certain contracted parties to sort of not have to adhere to. Now, from a substantive perspective, I was very sympathetic to to what was being proposed, and I would have been happy to endorse the recommendations. But from a process perspective, I guess the way that some might have viewed it is that the end justifies the means, and I personally don't feel that that is something that we should be codifying in new processes for the GNSO. Thanks.
So if this is Chuck again, and I'm coming to you next, Marika, but am I understanding you to say that you think the only way to solve the problem is to raise the thresholds for initiating the process?
This is Armour again. I don't know if it's the only way or not. It's the only way that I can see right now. I think the suggestion that you made would be really great if the things were ideally run and there was less subjectivity and more objectivity to how that would be managed in the future by the GNSO Council. But I'm not sure I see how that could be done. Thanks.
This is Greg. Can I get in the queue, please?
Yeah, just a second, Greg. Marika's in there, and Alan, and then you, okay? Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think in the case of Spec 30, and I think that it's probably a specific scenario as well where indeed if these kind of processes would have been in place, the council would have had additional options to deal with this issue instead of only the PDP, which indeed by many is considered as lengthy, taking a lot of time, and may not have been responsive in the way that the different parties were looking for at that point in time. But I just want to reemphasize as well something that I said before as well, because I think that the high voting threshold at the start of the process, I think, is seen by many as a way of even blocking having the conversation on the topic. And I think the whole idea is, I think, in the PDP and as well as in these other processes, that there should always be an opportunity for the community to get together and work on potential recommendations to address an issue. I think the safety valve is that before these recommendations actually go up to the board, they need to be adopted by a supermajority vote. So I think you do have there that safety valve in place, even if those at the start of the process didn't agree that it was either an issue that needs to be addressed or it wasn't the right process, or still feel that it really shouldn't be dealt with in such a way. And the vote at the end of the day is where I think they can still express that, and it's indeed you really need to have a supermajority of the council on board with the eventual recommendations before they actually move up. So I think that's a lot of the way, and it follows in that sense a similar way as the PDP. You only need very few people to actually start it off, but in order to actually get to recommendations that would create contractual obligations, you do have need to have almost everyone on board before it moves up to the next level. So I think that's a little bit the thinking behind it.
Thanks, Marika. Good points. Alan, and then Greg's next.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, as Chuck pointed out and I pointed out, at some level you can't have rules for everything. And when you elect a chair, you're electing a chair to cover the cases that are not covered in rules. Otherwise, it could be a computer running the meeting. But in fact, you want someone you trust because there will be edge cases which are not covered by rules. And that, I think, is a fact of life. The GNSO has gone through periods where the chair should have, it was deemed the chair should have no discretion whatsoever. And I think that ends up in ridiculous situations sometimes. So that's point number one. The second thing is, I'm almost afraid I've lost my train of thought, but you don't want to be in a situation, as Marika said, where discussions are blocked, and you're in danger of doing that as soon as you start raising thresholds. It would be interesting to see overall how many PDPs have there been proposed that were not approved, or for that matter, how many PDPs had recommendations which council didn't support. A lot of these things are almost for the visual optics of it, and the decisions get made the way the council wants to vote, and the exact numbers don't typically count. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Greg, you're up.
Yeah. Maybe nothing that hasn't already been said before, but I think that it seems like an ability to use kind of procedure to block substance, and that's something we try to avoid. The procedure should get out of the way of substance as much as possible. And trying to create a system where, things can get bumped to PDP, not because the PDP is the right thing for them, but because somehow it's easier to initiate a PDP, just doesn't seem right to me. And I think the issue of Spec 13, to me, gets back to some of the fundamental issues that started this working group off in the first place, which is what is policy and what is implementation, and whether a change in the registry agreement is a policy change and is a change in consensus policy or not, and also gets the issue of voting in the sense that if enough people thought that Spec 13 was a policy problem and a change in consensus policy, and then the vote would have been different. So to some extent, it seems to be, it's not really an attempt to relitigate the issue because the issue is done. But to try to avoid a situation that where something just didn't come out the way a particular group wished that it had. And the problem with trying to do that is that the next time around, you may be on the other side of the issue, and then you wish that you hadn't put in the rule in place that you just did, because now all of a sudden you're hoist by your own petard. So I think rules that are kind of as fair as possible and get to substance are always better.
Chuck, it's Anne. If I could jump in really quickly here. I got kicked out of an Adobe.
Go ahead.
Me too.
Go ahead, Anne.
I'm sorry. I can't even get back onto my server. No server available. I wanted to suggest a possible approach. I think Marika's point is well taken, that anything that came out of a GGP or a GIP, their recommendations, they would have to be by super majority, I think, is where we are on that. But I wanted to suggest that a possible outcome of a GGP is that the team determines that contractual obligations are either potentially added or decreased in the registry agreement, and that this group could consider, with respect to AMRS expressed concerns, that if a GGP